Digital LEDs pulse and flicker, finally resting on the number 24.
Previously, I'm 24.
There are 5 nuclear power plants ready to melt down. All I care about right now is making sure that that doesn't happen. Your name is on a lease in a building that was used by the terrorists to plan today's attack. That makes you a prime suspect.
I don't know anything about some building in Chatsworth.
I don't believe you.
Jack, please don't.
I don't know the specific building you're talking about. I can't find out.
How?
My corporate records are stored on my laptop. Yeah, here it is. It's Harris Barnes.
Interpol backtraced a name and provided a list of 4 nationals who've used it in the past.
Who used it most recently?
A man named Habib Marwan.
Okay, we need to find him.
I think we already have.
Jack rendezvous with Curtis in the Rockland building.
You okay?
Yeah. I overheard a phone conversation between Marwan and one of his men. We have less than 15 minutes.
Have your men secure the floor. Curtis and I are going after the override.
Marwan fires into the air and workers scatter in panic.
Marwan is impersonating a CTU officer. I repeat, the suspect is impersonating a CTU officer.
Owen shoots Agent Solaris and escapes through a side door.
Edgar, line 1, it's Curtis. He has the override.
Is the override logged in?
Yes.
Good, set it to channel 11. Hurry up.
Edgar takes control of the Dobson override from his computer at CTU.
It's starting to respond. It's working, Edgar.
Yes, yes!
The temperature is dropping on all remaining power plants.
Congratulations, Edgar.
Miss Driscoll, it's about your daughter, Maya. You better go down to the clinic right away.
Maya? Oh! Oh! Oh, baby! No!
Maya lies dead on the floor, blood seeping from her wrists.
The following takes place between 6 p.m. and 7 p.m.
Curtis, I got some new intel.
What is it?
We found out that the man you're looking for, Habib Marwan, works for McClellan Forrester.
But they're the ones that made the override. How's that possible?
He's working under the alias Harris Barnes. They had no reason to suspect him because his clearance is checked out. He must have positioned himself inside the company so we can use their technology.
Call McClellan Forrester. Tell them to freeze Marwan's personal files.
I did. You want me to send the comm team over?
No. We're closer. Jack or I'll go.
Sure.
Okay, we know Marwan was in the building within the last 15 minutes. I want 2 tight perimeters set up here. Roadblocks in every direction. Okay.
Jack, I just got off the CTU. It turns out this guy Marwan was working for McClellan Forrester under an alias, Harris Barnes. I told CTU we'd check it out.
Okay, I'll check it out. I want you to take Paul and Andre back to CTU. I'll be reachable on my cell. Cass will stay in charge here. This guy's still in the area. Our teams will pick him up. Curtis is going to take you both back to CTU.
What about you?
I have to go to McClellan Forrester.
Why then?
Turns out the man we're looking for works there.
Need to get into the computer system?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll go with you.
Why?
My company sold them their IT system. I used to be a systems analyst. I've designed the database. It's encoded with military security.
McClellan Forrester has personnel on board. They're going to help us get into his files.
Yeah, well, I can get you in back doors those people don't even know about.
Jack pauses for thought, then decides.
Fine, you go with me. Audrey, I want you to stay with Curtis. I'll be on myself. Let's go.
British Sky Broadcasting presents 24, starring Kiefer Sutherland as Jack Bauer, Kim Raver as Audrey Raines, Carlos Bernard as Tony Almeida, Alberta Watson as Erin Driscoll, and William Devane as Secretary James Heller. Created by Joel Surnow and Robert Cochran. Voiced by Tim Bruce on behalf of MCS Agency.
Stop.
A self-contained Erin Driscoll stops a medical orderly from zipping shut Maya's body bag. She slowly edges toward her daughter's body, her arms folded across her own in a veneer of self-control and comforting defense. Still the officer in command, she reaches out her hand and fondly strokes Maya's pinkish, pale face. Emotion wells up within her behind closed eyes, and she stifles a sob with the back of her hand.
Goodbye, baby girl.
The news reaches Sarah by phone.
Okay. I'll let everyone here know. Yeah, thanks, Matt.
Let everyone know what?
Driscoll's daughter committed suicide in our clinic.
Committed suicide? How did she do that?
She just let her rest.
Doesn't make any sense. She was being watched.
I don't know, Edgar. I wasn't there.
I was just thinking out loud. You don't have to be so hostile.
6:05. Sarah purses her lip with contained annoyance at Edgar's Chloe-ish retort, glances over to Hella in the briefing room, and makes herself the bearer of bad news.
Excuse me, Mr. Secretary.
Where's Driscoll? The president's about to come on.
Something terrible just happened, sir.
What's that?
Miss Driscoll's daughter, Maya, committed suicide in our clinic about 15 minutes ago. Apparently, the doctor walked in and she...
Aaron.
Sarah just told me. I am so sorry.
Thank you, sir. Go back to the floor, sir.
Yes, ma'am.
Aaron, you do not need to be here.
Where should I be, sir? We're still in crisis mode. Puppy Barwan is still out there, and we have no idea how many other cells he might be trying to activate.
For God's sakes, Aaron.
Our systems are in a transition state that require my constant attention. I'm not in denial about my daughter's death, nor am I in shock. I can perform my duties until you find a suitable replacement for me.
Secretary Heller, Ms. Driscoll, the president's coming on now.
Thank you, William.
Jim, Aaron.
First, I want to express my deep gratitude for what you've accomplished so far today. Wresting back control of the override has saved thousands of American lives. And the latest NRC report is that the San Gabriel Island meltdown is now under control.
That's great news, Mr. President. But has your staff informed you that we still have a few problems to deal with?
Yes, and that's why I'm calling.
I understand the man responsible for today's attack is still at large.
Yes, sir, he is. His name is Habib Marwan. He's been a long-term employee of a major defense contractor.
Yes, I heard, McLennan Forster.
This Habib Marwan, do you believe that the melting down of the reactors was his end game, or do you think he's planning something else?
As long as he's still out there, we have to assume it's not over.
Aaron, exactly where are we on apprehending this man?
All our resources
are being deployed to that end right now, Mr. President. I'll have more information in a few minutes once I've been briefed by my staff. But we know Marwan's in Los Angeles and we will find him.
6:08. Outside in an alley at the back of the Rockland building, Marwan discards his CTU disguise into a large industrial bin. As the evening light begins to fade, a city bus draws up to the nearby pavement and Marwan jumps on. As it begins to drive away, he hurries to the back of the bus and smiles warmly as he sees a mother sitting with her small child. Edgar briefs the rest of CTU on Marwan's recent employment history.
Using the alias Harris Barnes, Marwan worked at McLennan Forster for the last 2 years as a senior engineer. His most recent project there was the design and development of the override.
Before that?
Well, here's the timeline we've pieced together. He went to graduate school in England, then worked for several years for a company outside of London. Now, it's not clear whether he was radicalized there before that. But the one thing we do know is that from the day he arrived in the U.S., everything he did was about today.
What were his other duties at McLennan Forster?
We don't know yet. We're taking a first pass at his records now. I'm looking into the possibility that he may have used McLennan Forster as a base to recruit his sleeper cells.
And that brings up another issue. At present time, we have over 80% of field personnel looking for Marwan. I'm just wondering if we shouldn't divert part of that manpower to try to root out some of these other cells.
Driscoll stares absent-mindedly at the meeting table.
Aaron?
I'm sorry, Tony. What was the question?
Do you think we should reduce the field load on Marwan?
Driscoll glazes over.
How about we take some of our people off Marwan, but still keep a floor of 60% looking for him? Would that work?
Yes. That would work.
Okay.
Everyone falls silent as Driscoll takes her leave.
Edgar, I want you to relocate personnel.
Based on what?
Keep the people who've come in the last 6 hours working on Marwan. I want our most alert people focused on him.
Are we going to ignore what just happened here?
What do you mean?
She's talking about Aaron Driscoll.
She can't focus. She shouldn't be running this place.
Her daughter died a few minutes ago. Give her a little more time.
More time? Edgar, since when do we have the luxury of time?
She's not stupid, Sarah. She knows what's at stake here.
You're right, Sarah. We don't have the luxury of time. We have work to do, and our work does not include deciding Aaron Driscoll's fate.
I think we have to tell Secretary Heller.
No, we don't. Not yet. Now let's get back on it.
Driscoll finds a quiet corner of the building, and as grief begins to overwhelm her, tears pour down her cheeks. 6:10. Curtis arrives back at CTU with Paul and Audrey.
Hey, it's me. Where are you?
Curtis and I just arrived at CTU.
Listen, I want you to get a security detail and go back to the hotel and just get some rest.
Jack, I can't leave. Not now. My father still needs my help. Are you at McLennan Forrester yet?
Almost.
Jack, can you make me a promise?
What?
Take care of Paul. He's not like you. Please, Jack, promise me that you will look after him.
Yeah, I will.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay, I'll talk to you later.
All right, bye.
Traveling in Jack's car in the dark of evening, Paul decides to break the awkward silence.
Look, I don't resent you.
Well, I wouldn't blame you if you did.
No, you didn't steal my wife. We were separated. That's fair. But I'm not gonna let you take her from me.
I don't think that's really up to you. Or me.
No, maybe it isn't. But she still has feelings for me. I can hear it in her voice, and I'm gonna fight to keep those feelings alive.
Well, Paul, you're gonna have to do what you gotta do.
6:12. End of part one. 6:16. Tony to Driscoll and Heller.
None of our field agents at the Rockland building have been able to pick up a threat on Marwan. Starting to look like he might have escaped. So I think we have to assume that the first thing he's going to try to do is activate some of these sleeper cells.
I agree. He'll most likely launch a strike right away, create fear that we're still vulnerable.
You'll have to excuse me. I'm not feeling very well.
She faints.
Aaron! Sit down.
You all right?
She sips water.
Get me medical up here right away. Aaron Driscoll needs assistance.
No, I'm fine. I don't need anybody. I just got a little lightheaded for a second there. No, I don't need you here. It's all right. I was dizzy, but I feel better.
Well, take a break. Get something to eat. Take Miss Driscoll down and get her some food. I can handle the situation here while you rest. Come on.
All right. It's probably a good idea.
Heller watches pensively as Driscoll is escorted away by a CTU nurse.
She's going to need to be relieved of duty. Contact division. Alert them to the situation and tell them to send someone.
I ran this office for 2 years. I could take over for Aaron on a provisional basis.
Forget for the moment that you technically don't even work here. You've been away quite a while. You're not fluent with the new systems.
With all due respect, sir, you don't need a programmer. What you need is a decision maker who knows how to stack up protocols.
And you can do that?
Yes, sir, I can.
Fine, effective immediately. You're the interim director of CTU Los Angeles under my authority. I still want to contact district, have them send someone on a more permanent basis.
I understand, sir.
6:19. Tony descends the stairs from Heller's office with a new skip in his step. Curtis to Sarah.
Sarah, do you have the abstract on McLennan Forrester yet?
1 second. I'm finishing it now. All right. McLennan Forrester was a principal contractor in the design of the override. And Marwan, under the alias of Harris Barnes, had full security access on that project.
And you ran FBI checks on the others that were involved in the project?
Yes, they came up clean.
So we're dealing with a terrorist who had inside access to a defense contractor.
Actually, more than that, Curtis. McLennan Forrester, in addition to being a weapons manufacturer, trains their clients to use those weapons.
International clients?
Yes. Several countries in the Balkans, Asia, and the Middle East. This is a messy situation. When Jack gets to the McLennan Forrester, he's going to have to get into those company records and find out exactly who Marwan dealt with.
It's not going to be that easy. This reflects on the company. They'll be reluctant to give up incriminating information, even if Marwan were the only guilty party.
McLennan's office at McLennan Forrester's corporate headquarters. Senior executive John Rees.
Mr. McLennan, we need to talk seriously before CTU gets here.
What's the problem?
It was more than a coincidence that one of our products, the Override, was stolen and used in today's terrorist attack.
What do you mean, more than a coincidence?
The entire operation, everything from Secretary Heller's kidnapping to the meltdown of San Gabriel Island, was organized by one of our own employees.
What are you talking about?
One of our engineers, a man who we now know is a terrorist named Habib Marwan, was running his own covert organization from within our company.
When did you find this out?
A couple of minutes ago, they called and said that one of our employees, Harris Barnes, was actually Habib Marwan.
Who else knows about this?
Just the two of us and Conlon.
Gentlemen. I'm Dave Conlon, VP of Internal Security.
Jack Bauer, CTU. This is Paul Raines.
Jack? Paul? How can I help you?
I need to speak with your CEO, Gene McLennan.
Well, Gene's in a meeting with a couple of directors right now, and he asked me to assist you. I have access to everything in the building.
I'm sorry, but maybe my office didn't make itself clear. This is a matter of national security. I need to speak with Mr. McLennan now.
I understand. Let me see what I can do.
Jack begins to feel edgy.
What's the matter? Something's not right.
John, I'm not going to keep this a secret. We have to let the government know right away.
Sir, if you do this, it will, with 100% certainty, be the end of this company. Now, you built McLennan Forrester from scratch. Everything you have is tied up in it. If this comes out, your name will be synonymous with what happened today. Terrorism, treason.
Well, what do you want me to do, John? Lie to the government?
Look, if I knew 24 hours ago what I know now, I would have done whatever it took to stop today's attack. But there's nothing we can do now except protect ourselves and keep this company from going under, which it will do if CTU finds out the truth about Marwan.
John, CTU will subpoena the file. They will find out the truth.
No, you won't, Gene. I promise you. Conlon and I can deal with this if you let us.
I don't like the sound of this.
Mr. McLennan, we implicitly violated national security procedure. This could mean prison time. We've got to protect ourselves.
Did you get the latest casualty figures in San Gabriel?
No, not yet.
Which version of the Datalink security system are you currently running?
Excuse me?
One of my companies produces firmware for Datalink. We installed your system. You at 3.4 or 3.5?
3.5. Does that work for you?
Yeah. Thanks.
Conlon shows Jack and Paul into McLennan's office.
Dave, come on in. John Rees, Chief Technology Officer.
That's right. You helped us identify the override earlier, Jack Bauer.
It's good to meet you in person.
And I'm Gene McLennan. I'm sorry I was delayed.
No, thank you for your time, sir.
So how can I help CTU?
One of your employees, a Harris Barnes, is actually Habib Marwan, one of the terrorists responsible for today's attack and the theft of the override device. We need you to take your IT systems offline so Paul can look into his directory.
We can do that, can't we, John?
Absolutely. Follow me.
Thank you, sir.
Certainly.
McLennan throws an anxious look at Conlon. 6:24. End of part two. Part three. 6:29. Ella opens the heavy glass door to a reception area. Inside, Erin Driscoll sits all alone, weighed down with grief and thoughts of her lost daughter. Ella gently approaches her and sits supportively by her side.
Maybe you should go home.
I'm afraid to.
When my wife Susan died, I didn't deal with it at all. Actually, I went to work the next day. I remember thinking to myself, that's life. Quit feeling sorry for yourself. Get over it, get on with it. A few weeks later, I answered a call from an old friend of Susan's who did not know she had died. And when I heard myself saying, Susan has passed away, when I actually said those words, it hit me. All the pain I was trying to shut out just overwhelmed me. Erin, you can't keep it inside. You cry, you blame God. You blame yourself, and then you cry some more. And all the while, you let your friends help you. It's pretty simple. Very painful. I am so, so sorry for you.
Dad, I just wanted... I'm sorry. I just wanted to let you know that I was back.
Ella hugs Erin as Audrey makes an embarrassed retreat.
I will go home. You should go and make sure your daughter's okay.
If you need me, I'll be on the floor.
Erin sits alone again, with her tears and memories.
Excuse me, sir. Tony just told me you put him in charge of CTU.
That's correct.
That doesn't make any sense. He just got reinstated, and I'm second in command.
Tony had Erin's job for 2 years. He has experience running the CTU. You don't.
With all due respect, Mr. Secretary.
Relax, Curtis. It's provisional till district finds someone else.
For the record, I don't like it.
What do you hear from Bauer?
He just arrived at McLennan Forest a few minutes ago. He's going to call in the comm if he picks up any threads there.
6:32. Reese leads Jack and Paul into a small open-plan office.
Okay, that was Marwan's workstation in the corner. His computer is tied into the engineering subnet.
What about the rest of the network? Can we get into it from his account?
Yeah, I think there's a way to do that.
As Reese busies himself at Marwan's workstation, Jack scours around and notices the active security cameras. Conlon and McLennan observe them closely on a monitor.
All right, you've got two windows. One shows you his files in the system, and the other will get you outside the subnet.
Thanks.
Let me know if you need anything.
Thanks for your help.
While Jack looks around, Paul attempts to hack into Marwan's files.
This guy looks like he knows his way around our system.
Don't worry, I'll be able to control things from here. He won't find a thing.
Marwan purged a lot of files.
When?
Deletion dates aren't coming up.
That means they could have been deleted today.
Marwan wasn't here today. He was at Rockland, the override.
Maybe someone else deleted the files. There. All right, let me see what I can find.
As Paul continues to hack into the system, an anxious Reese contacts Conlon.
Yeah?
I had to open up a socket for him.
I can see it.
Are they going to be able to find anything?
As long as I can see where he's looking and stay ahead of him, I should be able to delete the incriminating files.
All right, I'm coming up.
What if you can't stay ahead of him? What happens then?
There are other options.
What other options?
We'll set off an EMP.
A pulse bomb? Are you out of your mind? It'll destroy every piece of hardware we have in this building. It'll cripple us electronically.
That's the point.
6:38. Driscoll to Tony in her office.
This is the handover sequence for COM. I left the default password in place. You can reset it as soon as we're done here.
All right.
Here are all the access codes to CTU and Division.
Thanks.
If any of my personal stuff gets in your way, you just have someone box them and put them into storage.
On her desk, Erin notices an old photograph of Maya, young and happy, playing with a fluffy black kitten. She slips it quietly into her handbag.
If you need anything, ask Curtis. And if he can't help you, you can always call me at home.
Thanks.
Erin picks up her bag and takes one last look around her office before leaving. She climbs down the stairs to the main concourse, and as she walks past, one by one, each of the operatives stand up in silent respect. But Erin continues walking, purposeful and measured, looking neither left nor right, resolutely avoiding contact with others' eyes. 6:40. Tony addresses the floor.
Could I have everybody's attention, please? By now you all know that I've taken over Erin Driscoll's command on a purely provisional basis. All protocols remain the same, but I want updates from all department heads every 15 minutes. Other than that, I'm just here to support you. So let's get back to work.
I'm gonna hear from Jack.
He and Paul Raines are looking for Marwan's files now.
Any promising leads?
Nothing yet.
All right, look, Edgar. Before Erin left, she told me the one person I should rely on is you.
She said that?
Yes, she did. So if anything comes across your desk you think is important, I want you to bring it to me directly, all right?
You got it.
All right, thanks.
Edgar,
have you scanned all the satellite imagery around the Rockland building?
Yeah, everything's at the takedown of the override.
All right. I want you to try different frequency channels on that satellite.
Manually?
Yeah. That's the only way we can be sure to see it all.
You're gonna have to talk to Tony about that. I'm supposed to be backing up Jack and Paul at McClellan Forrester.
Put somebody else on that. This is more important.
What's more important?
We've got 75% of our people on McClellan Forrester. I need Edgar to help me find a threat on Marwan.
No, we don't have much of a chance of finding anything on Marwan by satellite. Our best chance of picking up a threat is through those files at McClellan Forrester. Stay on that.
We can't afford one security-grade analyst going over imagery.
Yeah, one, but not Edgar. Put somebody else on it.
Tony. Are we trying to accomplish the same thing here, or is this about you establishing position?
I don't have to establish position. I've already got it. Now, what do you say we stop wasting time arm wrestling here? I respect your opinion, but we're going to disagree from time to time, and when we do, we're going to do it my way.
Fine. But I suggest you put more manpower into a data search from R1.
Right. Grab a couple people from image processing. Work the satellites with them. Curtis. Don't worry. I'm going to be out of here when this crisis is over. But in the meantime, I want the same thing you do. I want to find Habib Marwan, all right?
6:43. Marwan lies in wait in a dark alley. A car appears out of the gloom and drives down a ramp towards him. As he approaches the car, Marwan steps over some running water that trickles along a gully in the middle of the obscure back road. A swarthy-looking Middle Eastern man with long, flowing hair jumps out of the car to meet him.
Is everything all right? I heard you had a problem.
CTU got to the override before the other nuclear plants melted down.
Well, at least you're safe.
For now. But they know who I am. They'll be tracking me with everything they've got.
How does that affect our scheduling?
It doesn't. Stay on task. Make sure everything at the Air Force base is ready when I give the order.
I checked in with everyone as of 10 minutes ago. We're gonna make this thing happen, Habib.
Now remember, when you're done, get in touch with Prado. He'll get you out of the country.
And you?
Marwan does not answer. He looks at him with great dignity and embraces him like a brother, as if they were seeing each other for the last time. Touched, the other man is reluctant to leave.
Go.
Sadly, the man climbs back into his car and drives away into the night. Marwan looks anxiously around for signs of others, slinks off, and is soon enveloped by the urban gloom. 6:44. Back at the McLennan Forster building, Jack grows tired and impatient as Paul continues to hack at Marwan's tampered system.
Good. What?
I can rebuild the files from these empty directories.
Coded fragments begin to scroll across Paul's screen, observed from a control room by an increasingly panicky McLennan, Reese, and Conlon.
Damn it.
What's he doing?
He's trying to rebuild the files I deleted.
How can he do that?
I don't know. It's not a documented function of the system. He must be using some hook left in by the designer.
You're going to find evidence we sold arms to terrorists.
Not necessarily. The pulse bomb. We have to use it now.
Out of his depth, McLennan freezes in a moment of indecision. Reese seizes the initiative and immediately contacts a research technician to initiate an electromagnetic pulse bomb.
Research 12.
Set it off.
Sir, we weren't scheduled for a test today.
This isn't a test. Open up the safety chamber and set it off now.
Yes, sir.
We set off the CEMP. The CTU know we're trying to hide something.
Well, not necessarily. Marwan's their suspect. They'll assume he was buying.
What about the damage it'll do to the rest of the infrastructure?
A lot better than destroying the entire company. It'll take some time, but we can rebuild.
The technician pushes a button to open a heavy metal shield door that slowly winds back on large metal runners along the low-lying ceiling of the McLennan Forster Research Laboratory. As the door retracts, it reveals an electromagnetic core that glows with an eerie electrical light. Monitors and warning lights flash in all directions. The technician activates a routine sequence on his computer, and the core begins to charge up with power. He quickly leaves the room and calls Reese.
Yeah.
The EMP has been activated, sir. The shield door is open.
Okay, good. It's been activated. It'll take 10 minutes to charge up before its release.
The core begins to throb like a giant electrical heart as waves of power surge around its circuits. End of part 3. Part 4. 6:51. Sarah to Edgar.
Edgar?
What?
The phone taps that you asked me to put in place at McLennan Forester aren't holding.
What do you mean, not holding?
The connection keeps drifting. I have to reset the patterns. Is there a problem on our end?
Check their power supply. It could be their PBX.
Levels buffet up and down on Sarah's screen.
Oh my God, look at this thing. The amplitude's fluctuating like crazy.
I thought you checked that before you set the taps.
I did. It was fine then.
Let me call Jack. That's weird. Customer out of range? Yes, I need to speak with Jack Bauer. He's a CTU agent working in Harris Bond's office. Hello? Hello?
What's going on?
It's strange. All cellular landlines around McLennan Forster are out.
Can we use the network to message him?
Yeah, so far the computers haven't been affected.
All right, open up a window for me, would you?
Tony types a message to Jack across the internet that reads, "Jack, are you there? Tony." A message window bleeps onto Paul's screen.
What the hell's this?
I don't know.
Jack tries unsuccessfully to call Tony on a landline. His cell flashes back the words, "Looking for service."
Something's wrong. I gotta respond. Can you pipe that window over to this computer?
Yeah, just give me an Ethernet address.
6EFF3239.
Jack and Tony converse over the internet. Jack, I'm here. Radio frequency is out. Tony replies, outside your building too.
I've almost got these files rebuilt.
Jack asks, fixed radius?
Sarah, do we have any data points outside that building?
I'm online with the phone company now. They're getting complaints as far as 8 blocks away from the McLynn Forrester building.
Tony replies, no, it's growing.
Have you still got a connection?
Yeah, got it. Look at this.
Son of a bitch, it's encrypted.
That's it. Print it out.
Now!
A dip in power causes the lights to flicker. Conlon.
Damn it!
I've got something.
What?
Can't read it. How much longer till this thing goes off?
Any second now, we should be fine.
We're not fine. He's printing it.
What are you going to do now?
Take care of it.
I don't believe this.
Jack hacks into another system, and the words EMP arm flash up on the screen.
We're dealing with an EMP. McLennan and Forrester were leading the way in developing a non-lethal weapon for the military.
What is it?
An electromagnetic pulse bomb. Once it goes off, everything within its radius that has an electrical component gets fried. Lights, cars, computers, every piece of electronic data just disappears, vanishes forever.
How long have we got?
I don't know. Its capacitors are still charging. Come on.
All right, the printer's warming up.
Jack writes to Tony, "It's an EMP. We found something and they must be onto us." Tony replies, "We know." Trying to identify source.
Sarah, do we have any choppers in that area?
Yeah, one.
If that chopper's in the air when the EMP goes off, it's gonna knock out its whole electrical system, and that chopper's going down. Get him out of the area now. Edgar, where's this coming from?
McLennan Forrester, I'm trying to get a position now.
CTU-3, do you hear me? CTU-3, do you copy?
All right, this is coming through.
Tony writes, EMP is on the first floor, room 12.
Okay, they found it. I'm going to try and stop it. If I don't, I want you to take the hard copy and try and meet me in the front of the building.
Okay, power ran out. You must have found out about the EMP.
CTU Ace is heading out towards you. Don't let him anywhere near it.
Mr. Conlon.
Is everything all right?
Well, as you can see, we're having some problems with the electricity.
Jack just went to check it out.
Saw you were printing something.
Oh, how'd you know that?
Well, we were searching the system same time you were, trying to help you guys out. Mind if I take a look?
Sure. It's just in the printer.
Conlon plods over to the printer, but by the time he twigs that it contains nothing but blank sheets of paper, Paul is scarpered out of the room. An angry Conlon pulls out his gun and immediately takes up the chase. Meanwhile, Jack reaches the corridor outside room 12, blocked by two security guards. 6:56. By torchlight, Conlon searches for Paul in a maze of darkened offices. As Conlon enters the room, Paul cowers quietly behind a desk like a naughty child hiding from its wayward parents.
Yeah.
I'm moving to 3. All
right. To Paul's relief, Conlon leaves. Little knowing, he lies behind a desk only yards away. Back on the first floor, Jack distracts the two security guards by throwing a pencil down the hall. As the guards come to investigate, he attacks them as they round the corner. Jack makes quick work of them, smacking one in the kidneys before headbutting the other to the floor. As the first guard tries to hit back, Jack throws him viciously and his back hammers into the floor. Jack takes his security pass and uses it to swipe open the laboratory door. Inside, he's confronted by the exposed core throbbing and growling at him like an angry beast. To his left, Jack spots a computer terminal with the word system charging and door open flashing madly on the screen. He taps at the keyboard and the door slowly begins to close. He tries to abort the pulse bomb, but detonation is imminent. Jack dives behind the shield door as the pulse bomb explodes in a flash of white light. 6:58. As electrical failure sweeps through the area, whole floors burn out in a wave of darkness, rippling up skyscrapers and extinguishing all light. Jack runs back into the corridor, searches a guard, finds a working flashlight and runs off into the darkness. Meanwhile, Paul makes it down to the foyer, but finds his way barred by locked entrance doors. Conlon finally catches up with him and pins him to the wall with his gun and torch beam.
You have nowhere to go, man. The doors are locked. Where's the printout?
Paul freezes like a rabbit caught in headlights.
Where is it?
Conlon bundles Paul away. Meanwhile, Marwan walks normally along an innocent suburban street. Erin makes her way to an empty home, and Edgar monitors the pulse bomb's deadly effect.
One of our choppers is down.
Send medical in now. Call all field teams outside the perimeter of the blast. We have to find Jack and Paul.
On Sarah's screen, an abstract of the city power grid shows a gaping hole. Tony to Hela.
Sir, we have a problem. Someone set off an EMP blast in the Glen Forrester building. We believe Jack and Paul are still inside.
I assume that's a response to our presence there. Someone does not want us to get a hold of Marwan's file.
Jack was able to pull some information before the blast, but we don't know whether it was Marwan or somebody else who set it off.
Excuse me, sir. Ms. Driscoll's replacement arrived. She just passed through security.
Thank you.
That was fast.
We got lucky. Division had someone available with the appropriate qualifications and CTU experience.
I understand.
Tony, I want to thank you for filling in, and I'd like you to stick around and assist Miss Dessler.
I'm sorry, who?
Michelle Dessler, do you know her?
A look of pain etches across Tony's face as Michelle strides in like a corporate princess.
I used to be married to her.
7 p.m. The end.